Hello, hello, this is Ruben. If you cannot get enough of me on Bitter Brown Femmes and want more content, you can check out my two other podcasts. I have a media criticism podcast called S-Spoilers Podcast. That's spoilers with an E at the beginning. And then I have an interview podcast called Chismology Anthology. And in that one, I interview like different cultural creators and writers and activists, and it's super cool. So yeah, check that out. And yeah, let's start the show. Just kidding, the patron shout out goes first.
Before we begin this episode, I do want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfemmes. Without their support, none of this would be possible. I'd especially like to thank Jen A, Jesus Vicente V, Joel M, Evelyn, Danielle V, Adri, Cassandra G, Linda M, Saul Alexander Z, Yavi, Abigail Araña, and Kimberly B. All of your support means a ton to us, so thank y'all so much. If you want to help us keep this thing going, feel free to go to patreon.com/bitterbrownfemmes. The link will be in the description of the episode. Alright, now let's start the show.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live.
Fuck it.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks.
Five, four, three. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. This is one of your hosts, Ruben.
And this is your other host, Cassandra.
And yeah, we're coming to you from different states because this podcast is recorded from different states. So we don't say that enough, even though we say it every episode. People are so surprised. But yeah, this is my speaking voice. I know people, even though we just published an episode, last episode was about our speaking voices. We still got some comments about us sounding like Valley Girls. But you know, I stand in my truth.
Yes, we both do. So we had, if you haven't listened, as always, go and catch up on our last episode. But we did speak about our Valley Girl voices and how people don't like it and how we love it. So anyway, and it was interesting because I posted yesterday a meme and from one of my favorite meme pages called Elle Woods Core. Y'all should definitely check them out on Facebook. Definitely like our thing. But anyway, I posted a meme about it and I wrote like a paragraph about us talking about our Valley Girl voices and why it's like sexist and whatever. And like, I swear 3 hours after that, like someone DM'd us like the same shit as like the last comment that we got from a different person. That was pretty much like, I try to listen to your podcast, but it's obnoxious and you say like a lot, like the same bullshit. I don't know. It really pissed me off. And it pissed me off, not because, again, not because I'm like, everyone has to like our podcast. Like, no, not everyone likes it. And that's totally fine. But I just don't understand, like, what the purpose is of, like, taking the time out of your day to DM a podcast that you obviously don't like just to say, I don't like you. Like, it's just petty and unnecessary. And that's why it pissed me off. So I was about to fight her, but Ruben didn't let me, so whatever.
Well, to me, it's just like, what is the point? Like, what do they want from us? Like,
exactly.
Like, at the end of the day, like, I'm 30. It's too late to change this voice, even if I wanted to. Like, I mean, I guess I could take vocal lessons, but I'm, like, not that committed. Like, I really do like my voice. Like, so It is what it is.
Yeah.
Other than that.
I was thinking about that too, because I was looking up, like, there's so many articles about the whole thing, like, about policing the way women speak, especially, like, saying like, and, like, with, like, filler words, like, totally, and, like, all of that. There's just so many articles, so many studies on it, like, it's not, like, this brand new thing. But anyway, I was looking up articles because I wanted to share some, and an example for me of, like, a Valley Girl who's, like, a prominent like feminist icon is like Kathleen Hanna. And if you don't know, Kathleen Hanna was like in Bikini Kill. She was a big part of the Riot Girl movement. She was on the Tigre. But anyway, like she speaks like a valley girl too. And that's something that was always policed of her as well, especially being in a band like Bikini Kill, where she's like screaming and talking about like rape and patriarchy. And then she's just like a total valley girl. And she's like, I want to say she's probably like 42 now. And she still talks like that. And I fucking love it. And like, I was thinking about too, like, I wonder if like my voice, like if I'm going to continue talking like this when I'm older. And it's like, yeah, I am. So fuck off. It amazes me how many people like admit to listening to our podcast that like absolutely do not like us. So.
Okay, haters. Yeah, people who hate listen are always a surprise to me, because it's like, don't you have something better to do? Like anything, yeah. Like mop your house or something.
We're like moms right now. Pónganse a limpiar.
Yeah. Anyways, how have you been?
I have been okay. I feel like, yeah, the last time we recorded was like, what, like 2 weeks ago? So I feel like usually we're like, I haven't seen your face in like a month. So I feel like, you know, just getting ready for Halloween. I've been like thrifting. That's all I've been doing, because I look at it like an idea and I'm like, oh, I can totally just go to the thrift store and like put all that together. And then I think it's easy and it's not. So I've just been going to literally every thrift store in El Paso to look for things. That's what I've been spending my time on. So,
yeah. I like have no inspiration for like what to dress up for Halloween. So I'm probably not going to do that. But I'm also like broke, so it's like, there's only like one Halloween party. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. I'm like looking around. I have like a Ash Ketchum costume somewhere in this room, and sometimes I like that's like my go-to like easy thing. Yeah, that's probably what I'm gonna be.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah. I'm glad that, like, Ash Ketchum is not anti-black or doesn't support the Iraq war. I don't know how to transition.
Yeah. Well, you know, Halloween is such a, like, I feel it's such a queer holiday. Mm-hmm. Right? It's, like, for the children, but also for, like, the queer. and, like, femmes, you know? Because we're, like, let's fucking, like... Let's be honest, we're like the ones who kill it every fucking year. Like, we're creative and we just make it look cute and hot or whatever. So, yeah. So I feel like if anyone has any tips for Ruben on what they should be for Halloween, something quick and easy, not something like wild where they need very basic shit. So, yeah. So throw some ideas our way. And
my best Halloween costume was when I dressed up like Nicki Minaj, like right after Super Bass.
Have I seen this photo?
Maybe. Or no? I bought the whole getup, like the whole thing. Like, you know when she's riding the motorcycle in that giraffe suit?
Uh-huh.
I bought that.
Okay, I haven't seen that then. I think then I just saw the picture of you and Nicki Minaj, I think.
Oh, yeah, I was a huge fan. Oof, different times.
But she retired.
Yeah. Yeah, that was I like spent so much time and money on that, because that was such a stan. I got a wig custom made.
Wow. Wow, that's dedication. I don't feel like I've spent that much energy on a Halloween costume. My costumes are very basic. But yeah, I'm always interested in what celebrities are for some reason, because I always feel like they have access to like any costume. You know what I mean? Like, they're the ones who can literally be like, oh, I want to be this. Like, Beyonce always kills it every year. She always does something. Like, I'm always excited to see what Beyonce's going to do. And then you have those celebrities who obviously, like, dress up as fucking pilgrims and in blackface and something fucking racist. But sometimes you don't need to wait for Halloween to know, like, when a celebrity is a piece of shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Ellen, degenerate.
Yeah, degenerate.
Ah! Degenerate. Yeah, thanks, y'all. I've been. I'm trying to get that to stick.
Ellen DeGeneres. So, in case you have not been in the know, Ellen DeGeneres hung out with George W. Bush at like a sports game of some sort. I think it was baseball. No, it was football. And they were like having a gay old time.
And then people were calling her out, like, rightfully so. They were like, why are you hanging out with George Bush? Like, he's literally a war criminal who, you know, left black people to die after Hurricane Katrina, who bombed Iraq. And she goes on her show, and in her monologue, she makes light of the situation. She's like, oh, I grew up in a time when, you know, we people who have different opinions can just hang out and be friends, and that's what our country needs. And, like, her white-ass audience is like, yeah, Ellen, you go, liberal feminism. And it's like, people are like, no, that's like, it's not. It's one thing to have a different opinion. It's another thing to, like, literally have caused the death of, like, countless people of color. And so after this monologue that Ellen did, Rafael Shimonov created a video where he posted all of George W. Bush's, like, war crimes behind her monologue, like, in the screen behind her monologue. And she's been, like, adamant, like, her team has been on it about, like, taking it down. But the more she tries to take it down, like, the more this image and this video circulates. And so to me, it's like, we're living in a time where, like, the public has become much more aware of, like, this, how sinister liberalism can be. And, like, they're not going to take it. But she came from a time where you can do shit like that. And you can say, like little, like, nothing. You can make these statements of, like, we're all friends and blah, blah, blah. And, like, people are going to eat that shit up. But it's, like, that is not the time we're living in anymore. And so, I don't know. To me, it's just, like, it brings up a lot of feelings that I've, you know, been having about, like, assimilation as queer folks. Because I do see it a lot. Like, this comes, because this happened only weeks after, like, the Queer Eye dudes, the Queer Eye, they were interviewing them and they asked them to rate people's style. And they were, like, trashing, like, Bernie Sanders and, like, oh, the way, like, if this is what communism means, essentially, like, oh, well, I don't want it because he looks like shit, essentially. And then when they're like, at least Ronald Reagan, like, when he was killing people with AIDS, like, he had a very tailored suit and he looked great. And I'm just like, this is, like, the fucking pinnacle of, like, homo nationalism, of, like, queer assimilation. And, like, to me, it just shows, like, the incapacity of queerness in and of itself to disrupt anything. Like, just because you're queer does not mean you actually put a wrench in the status quo. If anything, neoliberalism finds a way to co-opt your identity in order to push, like, state agendas, right? And so we saw that with Ellen. We see that with Queer Eye folks. Like, this is something that we continuously have to fight it, like, push back against, right? Like, because what good is representation if it doesn't serve a liberatory purpose?
Yes. And with Ellen, for example, in particular, I should say, it's like, this isn't this brand new thing. Like, all of a sudden, this is the first time that she does something, quote unquote, problematic, right? It's been interesting, actually, to me that she's getting so much backlash, you know, rightfully so. But she actually had George Bush on her show last year. And I remember seeing some people, like, upset about it. But it wasn't as big as this. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know, maybe a lot of people just didn't know that she had him on her show last year. But I feel like having someone on your show is, like, to me is is even more, like, if it's just, like, trash than, like, you know, sitting next to them at some fucking game. Both are trash, but you know what I mean? It's like, you actually booked this person on your fucking show to interview him and gave him, like, this platform, which he already has, but it's just, and her fucking, like, Ellen is, like, that white, like, gay liberal that's just, there's actually this really good article. It was written by Kinfolk Collective. I had shared it. This was from 2016. Unfortunately, the article is not, like, you can't access it anymore because the Kinfolk Collective website is down. But it was about Ellen, and it was called Nice and Racist, What Ellen DeGeneres Teaches Us About Racism. And it was so good because it did unpack how people confuse racism with being nice. Like, that if you are a nice white person and you're cool, you know, oh, you're cool with me, that means that you can't be racist. And that if you're a liberal, you can't be racist. If you put on a smile when you talk to me, like, you cannot be racist, you know? And racism, being racist isn't an attitude. You know, you can be nice and be racist. Like, you can be, you can say hello and how are you to a person of color and still be fucking racist. I mean, you can fucking be married to a fucking black person and still be racist. You know, it's not, those things like exist together. And I think, you know, one of, I'm just going to read, like, because I had copied and like part of the I had put the caption when I shared the article, like a little bit of it. And just to read a little bit, it says, we let nice white people off the hook because we assume being nice means you're a good person and a good person could never be racist. And then the nice, good white woman crosses a line with a joke and we move the line up a little. Then that nice, good white woman crosses the line again with another joke and we move the line again. If we keep moving the line because we're assuming that nice and racist are not mutually exclusive, eventually we'll go over the ledge as we're backing up to move the line. So yes, it's quite possible for a nice person to oppress you based on race. It happens often. Reevaluate your definition of racism, because racism is not merely a simplistic hatred. It is more often broad sympathy towards some and broader skepticism towards others. So I just want to read a little about that. And I wish I could share that article because it was so good, but it's pretty self-explanatory. I think Ellen, I don't know if we've talked about her before, but then like the fact, like before when she, you know, because like her thing is having people on her show from the internet and then giving them money. And like, so everyone again sees her as this very like generous person who gives people money. And it's like, I think before she would never have like people of color, black people on her show. And like, I think now with like Twitter, with people like calling that out and like tweeting at her, like, why do you only like invite white kids, you know, that have like this dancing video? Or like, now I think like she does it a little bit more, but yeah, she's just a hot mess. And like, I just hate this notion of like, we should all get along and we should all, this is like the world I want to live in, where George Bush and like Ellen DeGeneres hang out at a football game. Like, that's the world you want to live in? Like, okay.
I also, this whole situation also reminds me that this is how folks are going to act when Trump goes out of office.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to go back to being a reality show like figure, and he's going to be invited all over the place. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel had him, like, I think during his campaign, and like, there's that big image of like Jimmy Kimmel like petting his head or whatever. And this is how liberalism.
So did Saturday Night Live.
Oh, you're right. Like, this is how like liberalism functions, to like rehabilitate like monsters. We saw that with John McCain, like, you know, right after his death, every liberal was like tripping over themselves to praise this man who has done so much wrong in the world. We're seeing that with George W. Bush in real time. Everybody's making him out to seem like this like innocent, just like, you know, quote unquote dumb, like little white man who doesn't know any better, who paints, he likes football, and, you know, hangs out with, you know, his favorite lesbian. Like, never mind Katrina, never mind Iraq. And so I think about how that's going to happen to Trump after he's out of office. And to be honest, like, it's not even that much of a jump. Because when the whole situation with Ellen and Bush happened, people brought up the fact that, like, she gave Donald Trump Jr., or the latest Trump, Melania's child, she gave that kid a golden carriage that has a chandelier on it.
No.
And it came out in People's Magazine.
Is that real? I thought that, yep, was like a joke that people were making.
No, it's on People's Magazine.
That's real? Yeah. Why would she do that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And that, I mean, that happened like almost 2 decades ago. So,
okay, like, this is, I'm like, wait.
No, it's
but
not
even
new.
Then,
it,
yeah,
happened 2 decades ago.
Oh, okay. I mean, still ill, but yeah, I actually tweeted that. Like, I, and it's not just with Ellen. Like, every time that John, like when John McCain passed, or George Bush's dad or whoever, and then people are like, let's mourn them in peace, and this is not the time to talk about how a piece, like how awful they were. And that's like the same thing people are going to say about Trump when he dies. That's the same thing they're going to say out of office. And honestly, I think a lot of it is every like new, for example, like Republican president is like worse than the one before, right? And I don't want to say worse than the one before, because they're all terrible people in different ways. But I feel like because now it's Trump that's in the White House, and Trump is like the face of racism and xenophobia and white supremacy, then it's easy for like George Bush and John McCain and people that came before him to dissociate themselves from that, right? Because people are like, oh, well, they're not Trump. Oh, well, at least George Bush didn't like do this thing. And at least John McCain didn't do this one thing, because they're comparing them to Trump, because Trump is like the evil right now. So when Trump gets out of office and whoever the next, like, let's say the other, you know, whoever follows Trump, that's like a Republican president, for example, they will then become that face of hatred and evil. And then Trump will be like, oh, well, at least Trump, you know, at least Trump did this and he didn't do that. And it'll be easy for him to, you know, just make his way back into like society as a, like it never happened. And it's fucked up.
Yeah. And it makes space for things to get worse. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, because if things get worse, then you always have, you know, this time to point back on it. Like, oh, at least, you know, Trump was bad, but he wasn't this bad. And that's a way that people get away with things. Right? So the next fucking fascist president we have, like, you know, starts rounding people off and shipping them away. Like, they can be like, oh, look at Trump. He never did this. And it's like, this is how things progressively get worse, you know? And it's also, there's this like big myth about like, you know, there being a center between like, you know, leftism and like conservatism, and somewhere in that center is liberalism. And it's like, no, the thing about that center is that because liberalism serves the state, and the state is always going to push towards a fascist, like a controlling place, like the center keeps being pushed to the right. And so that's something that people need to be aware of as we continue these conversations, as they become politically engaged, right? Like, this whole, like, appease both left and right shit, like, it only, first of all, it's a myth. And second of all, like, it can only work in a world where centrism isn't actually center-right.
And then, not to mention all of those fucking celebrities that were, like, co-signing her bullshit, which is not, you know, surprising, but like Kylie Jenner, Orlando Bloom, Reese Witherspoon, my father-in-law, Lenny Kravitz, unfortunately.
No.
And I'm like, unfortunately. But anyway, just, you know, and that's just like to say that that was a whole conversation I was seeing also of like class solidarity, because what do all these people have in common at the end of the day? Politics aside, like, race aside, they're all rich. Like, they are so fucking removed from, like, real shit. You know what I mean? Because this shit doesn't affect them. Like, Alan, again, is a white cis lesbian woman. Like, how is her hanging out with George Bush or, like, his policies actually going to affect her? You know what I mean? Like, it is class solidarity. Like, that's the thing that they all have in common. And at the end of the day, they're all going to back each other up because they're like, oh, they're coming for Alan, so they're going to come for me next, right? And it's, you know, people started talking about that and how, like, rich people have class solidarity and we don't. And, like, that's fucking sad. Like, that's fucking sad, right? Like, we should be on that shit too. But,
yep.
You know, we all think we're going to be millionaires one day, so it's easy to shit on on each other. And also, we have not forgotten about what y'all did to the Dixie Chicks.
Oh, by yes. The way. Yes. Fucking, you know, Ellen, you know, fuck, if you're not going to be standing with people of color, like, and poor people, like, and people being affected by the Iraq war, like, bitch, the least you can fucking do is stand with your fellow rich white lesbians who literally put their whole fucking career on the line because they called out George W. Bush. And if you're not familiar, like, in, you know, during George Bush's presidency, the Dixie Chicks said that they were ashamed that George W. Bush was from Texas. And what followed was, like, fuck, all these white people fucking went apeshit. They burned Dixie Chick records. They threatened their lives. You know, they you know, protested out of their concerts. Like, these girls, like, almost didn't have a career anymore. And it wasn't until they released the song Not Ready to Make Nice that, like, the whole world was, like, you know, kind of back on their side again. But to the day, like, people do not like them because they are, you know, not conservative in country music, which is, like, one of the most conservative genres. And that's when Beyonce showed up with the Dixie Chicks at the Country Music Awards to sing Daddy Lessons. That's why, like, white people were shook. Because, like, you know, you have, you know, this black woman along with these like progressive country lesbians and fucking shit up on like the on one of the whitest award shows in a sea of white award shows. But yeah, so justice for the Dixie Chicks. You know what? We should play Dixie Chicks this episode. We can agree on that instead of whatever we had planned.
Yes. So justice for the Dixie Chicks. Okay, they did not get blacklisted for Ellen to be up here fucking defending George Bush. For all of you bitches to be up here defending George Bush. See, and that's the thing that I was just talking about. I remember in high school, I wasn't like what I know now, but I remember like not fucking with George Bush, and a lot of people didn't. And I remember like that was a thing to hate George Bush, like rightfully so. And like it's so wild to me that years down the road, all of a sudden George Bush is everyone's fucking grandpa. Like, and that's what scares me. Like, that's gonna be the, like, I'm already angry that that's gonna be like Trump's future. Anyway, anti-way. So we always, it seems like for our last few episodes, we always just have to talk shit about like at least one white woman who like does some whack shit. This week it was Ellen. And also something that we have been talking about all the time, especially for like the last few episodes as well, is anti-blackness in the Latinx community. So let's jump into that. Because, yeah, man, let me tell you, after me and Ruben recorded our last episode, I want to say maybe like, I want to say a few days after we recorded, 2 days, all of this shit happened on Twitter. A lot of anti-black shit happened in like the span of like 2 days that me and Ruben were like, let's fucking record right now because we really need to address this. Unfortunately, I was out of town, like shit came up, you know. But we've been wanting to address a lot of these things, and so that's what we're going to do now. But just to let you all know, all of this has been building up for, like, the last the last 2 weeks. And so we wanted to talk about the anti-blackness. And then today, like 2 hours ago, tell them what happened 2 hours ago, Ruben.
Gina Rodriguez said the N-word on her Instagram live or Instagram story. Oof. So other than that, we've also been wanting to talk about, you know, anti-blackness in the Latinx community. Like, obviously, like, it's always there. Like, we're always, as non-black Latinx, we're always fucking up. But, it, like, in the last month, like, I feel like we just took, like, Latinx Heritage Month to, like, kick it up a fucking level. Because there's a lot of shit that has been going on. Like, I mean, we almost recorded, like, an emergency fucking episode. Because, like, 2 days after our last episode, after we recorded our last episode, you know, I woke up to a hashtag trending. And it was, like, how do Mexicans talk? And it happened because Becky G and this K-pop star, they released a song called Chicken Noodle Soup, which, like, us heavily sampled, you know, the song by a black artist. And in the song, like, Becky G and J-Hope, like, have these, like, put on these, like, hood accents, quote-unquote. And, you know, black folks, particularly black Latinxes, were like, what the fuck is this, right? Because, like, this whole, like, accent, this Caribbean accent that Becky G put on, like, it isn't new, first of all. Like, she's been having this accent since she made the crossover to Latinx music and she started doing reggaeton. And but her fans tried to pretend that it isn't some act, even though it is. So Twitter user Rude Boy Luna called it out. It's like, why, you know, do these why does Becky G put on this like Caribbean accent? Basically, that's not how Mexicans talk. And so Becky G's fans and, like, a bunch of J-Hope stans, like, started harassing this person and eventually got them suspended and were like, oh, how do Mexicans talk? How are we supposed to talk? And it's like, first of all, you're being obtuse because you know that, you know, there is a Mexican accent, specifically if you're from fucking Inglewood, which is where Becky G is from, which is only, like, 10 minutes from where I spent my fucking life in Southeast LA. And she... people, particularly Mexican Americans in Inglewood, like, they don't have this Caribbean accent that Becky G put on in order to, like, reach a wider Latinx market. like that's something that she consciously did in order for her not to not sound so whack as she's like appropriating reggaeton, which is the Black Caribbean sound. And so people were acting obtuse, and I'm like, I know, I grew up around people like Becky G everywhere. That's not what we sound like. Even like, as we've discussed before, particularly with Daniel Alvarenga when he was here, like even like other Latinx ethnicities that are not Mexican, even their accents assimilate to the Mexican one in Los Angeles, because the Mexican American accent is so prevalent in Los Angeles that in order to fit in, other Latinx ethnicities assimilate their sound, their voices. And so to pretend that like Becky G's like use of a Black Caribbean accent isn't some sort of like linguistic imperialism is kind of fucking ridiculous. It's being willfully ignorant to her, not only appropriating Black Caribbean music, right? Because, you know, reggaeton didn't fucking come from Mexico and didn't come from fucking Inglewood, but also to appropriate the way that, you know, Black Caribbean folks talk. And so this hashtag was viral, and everybody was bashing Becky G's detractors. And even We Are Me Too posted a fucking whack-ass essay about, like, quote-unquote essay, about how, like, it's ridiculous to call her out on her accent and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know how Mexicans talk. You know how we talk. We don't fucking talk like Becky G pretends to sing. Like, that's not our fucking voice. Nowhere, maybe, unless you're, like, maybe go somewhere where, like, Mexican folks are continuously surrounded by Caribbean folks and there's more of an exchange. But where Becky G is from, where Becky G spent her fucking life, that is not the cultural exchange that happened here. Like, you know, in L.A., we have primarily Mexican population. Then after that is, like, Central American, particularly Salvadorian. And it's, like, a laundry list of other Latinx ethnicities before we even get to a Caribbean, like, an ethnicity that has that accent. So
thank you for breaking that shit down, because there were a lot of people who were trying to be, like you said, they were just being so obtuse. And I was actually, I didn't even know the history behind it. So thank you for breaking that down. When I saw the tag, I knew that it was in response to like that video. And like, I knew the situation that was happening, but like, I was like, when I started tweeting about it, there was always, you know, those K-pop stands in my mentions, and I was so confused because I was like, why are there so many of them in my mentions? Like, do they all like Becky G? I didn't even know who Becky G was. I really didn't know a lot of the details, and then like I put it all together, like, oh, okay, so they're like defending her because she made a song with like someone they stan. So it's not necessarily, you know, these stans out here on Twitter, racist as fuck, anti-Black as fuck, number one. But they're also just so fucking messy and exhausting. And a lot of these K-pop stans are Mexican, apparently. I don't know.
Yep.
The whole thing was a hot-ass mess. But this is the thing. Like, a day before that happened, like, literally a day before this tag happened. Actually, let's rewind.
Let me add one thing before you move on with that. Like, it's also, like you said, like, yeah, K-pop stans, a lot of them are Mexican or Latinx. And mm-hmm. I think that this is a perfect opportunity for us to really ask ourselves why there's such a big fan base for K-pop in Latin America and for reggaeton in Latin America. You know, when these are, particularly for reggaeton, its current iteration is one that completely erases its founders, right? So Black people are erased from the music they created, right? And with K-pop, it's like you see all these East Asian folks like adopt like, you know, their idea of like, you know, a Black hip-hop star or a Black pop star into their own image. And I'm like wondering if this is a way for like non-Black Latin Americans to like listen to hip-hop, to listen to reggaeton without actual Black people being in the picture. And so I think that's something important that folks need to maybe ask themselves. If they've never engaged reggaeton prior to the Becky G's of the world and never engaged like R&B and hip-hop prior to, you know, K-pop's iteration of it, I think that really asks us to figure out like what's kept us from those genres prior to them.
Thank you for adding that. Yeah, because that threw me off too, and then it made sense. But so there was an article that came up, and it was about three non-Black Latinos in Arizona, I believe, who shot at a Black man for telling them that they shouldn't use the N-word. So these were three non-Black Latinos, you know, they were like ranging, I would assume, from like 18 to like 21. So, you know, they're pretty young, not an excuse, but just giving you some background. They had approached a Black photographer at the park to take, you know, there was a Black photographer, he was taking pictures, and they approached him and were like, you know, can you take pictures of us? So this Black man is taking photos of them and doing them a favor, and they're over here saying the N-word, and maybe not, there was a video of it, I didn't watch it either because I don't like watching these videos, but the video was posted for people to see. So I assume that they were just saying the N-word amongst themselves. Like, I don't think that they said it to him. They were just saying it to each other or saying it casually. And this Black man said, you know, if you're not Black, don't say the N-word, which is a very simple fucking thing to say. And their response was, let's shoot at this man for telling us not to say this word. The Black man did not die, thankfully. Not that that makes it any less better. I mean, obviously, I'm glad he's alive, but that happened. And then the very next, and then that brought on a conversation, obviously, of like, I don't know. It's 2019, and I honestly am tired of people, of non-Black people, questioning why they can't say the N-word. It fucking trips me the fuck out. It really does. Like, it's such a simple thing. I don't understand, like, what's so complicated about not saying the N-word if you're not Black. I know what it is. I know that it's, like, racist and, like, anti-Blackness, and it's, like, people feeling entitled to Black culture and feeling entitled to using this word. And I think Black people telling non-Black people that they shouldn't use it makes them want to use it even more, because that's like their own anti-Black racism. That's like, oh, a Black person's telling me not to do this. Well, who are they? You know, and it's like this power thing. And it's all of it is rooted in anti-Blackness. So yes, like, I understand why people say the N-word, but I'm also like, come on. Like, I don't know, like, I don't know how many times like this has to be said. And the whole thing about that article in particular, like that situation that happened, is like, y'all are so invested and determined to say this word that you're willing to go to prison for it, that you're willing, not just to go to prison for it, you're also willing to kill somebody over it. So when people tell me it's just the N-word, or it's just a song, or all of these fucking excuses, and it's like, it's rooted in a lot more than that. It's not just quote unquote a word. First of all, that word has a lot of violent history. It's not yours to use. It's, you're saying, oh, it's a song, it's just a word, that doesn't mean I'm racist. Yes, it does fucking mean you're racist, because Black people are telling you not to say it, number one, but also because, you know what I mean, it's for those people that say those things. Like, this is how upset people are that they can't use it. This is how, like, invested they are in saying that word, that they're willing to be fucking violent physically to defend their use of that word. So that happened. And then, anyway, I just want to give you all a little, like, those two main things happened. And then right after that happened, right after, like, we were having that conversation about the N-word, that hashtag thing happened the very next day. So people were defending their right to use the N-word. And then the very next day, they harassed a Black Latina and got her suspended from Twitter for calling out anti-Blackness. And then they made a hashtag in response to that, trying to make themselves the victim in the whole situation. And that hashtag was trending. Like, that's the thing that took me out. Like, that hashtag was fucking trending on Twitter. So y'all had that so much energy to do all that, but you have no energy to, like, not say the N-word. or to tell people not to say the N-word. You know, when that article came out of the shooting, like, we could have all made a hashtag, like, about it. Like, don't say the N-word if you're not Black. Or, you know what I mean? Having a conversation about it. But no one did that. Everyone wanted to justify their use of that word, and instead wanted to put all their energy into creating this false narrative of us being a victim of, quote unquote, like, xenophobia and racism from a Black Latina. Like, that whole thing, like, is, oh my God.
Yeah, people were like, coming for this person, Rude Boy Luna, who you know, started the conversation about, like, Becky G appropriating a Black Caribbean accent. They were attacking Rude Boy Luna because apparently she used the word spick, which I didn't know that people still found offensive, TBH, because I, other than, like, the occasional time when I, like, I've said it as a joke, right? Spick, if you don't know, it's, like, kind of, like, an older slur for Latinx folks, and it's like a kind of drawing on the word Hispanic, but you know, the only time I've ever really heard it has been in, like, literally the West Side Story, like, because that's what they use it a lot, and if you're not familiar with the West Side Story, it's a musical that happened, like, in the freaking 50s, and so Luna used the word spick, and they were like, oh, you know, how come, you know, she gets to be xenophobic or racist? And it's like, I guarantee you that, like, a Black Latina who would fall under the spick umbrella, like, using the word spick against non-Black Latinxes, like, that carries no weight compared to us saying the N-word, which is, like, us non-Black Latinxes using the N-word, which carries historical weight, right? Like, I grew up in Southeast LA, and every time somebody's, like, making jokes about, like, nobody says the N-word more than, like, you know, Latinos from the hood, like, I think about where I grew up, and it's like, fuck, yeah, they're right. Like, people out here, we were saying the N-word, like, left and right growing up. And oftentimes people bring up their Black friends of, like, oh, you know, you say Black people say we can't say the N-word, but my Black friend let me. And it's like, a lot of the times we don't analyze, like, why it is that, you know, certain Black folks who live in primarily non-Black areas, like, why they allow us to say the N-word, right? So growing up, like, yeah, it was a primarily non-Black Latinx area with, you know, some Black folks, and sometimes they would let us say the N-word. And so it wasn't until much later that I was thinking about, like, how, you know, growing up surrounded by non-Black Latinxes, like, it became a survival tactic for them to allow them to do this, to allow us to say the N-word, right? And so when folks bring that up, I think about, like, okay, so why do you think that the Black friends that you have let you say that? Like, is it a survival tactic? Is it, you know, also, like, they don't speak for, like, the greater population, the greater Black population? And so, yeah, so when I came back home from being away from home for a while, and I, you know, met up with, you know, friends that I made in high school, and they were still saying the N-word, like, you know, when I confronted about it, they were like, you know, well, we've said this all our lives. And so I had to talk to them about, like, why do you think that us as non-Black Latinxes, like, why do you think we're entitled to this word that basically, you know, was used to oppress Black people, you know, during slavery and to the day, and that, like, you know, it's, you know, been known to be the most offensive word in the world. Like, why do we still feel entitled to say it? And, you know, one of their, you know, excuses was like, oh, well, Black people say it. And it's like, yes, because that's a term of empowerment for themselves, and it's a term of reclamation for themselves, right? Because they've been oppressed by this word, they get to decide the terms in which they let that word function for them. And so, you know, so these were conversations that I had with old, you know, friends that I've had since I was, like, 15. And we know we eventually came to understanding, and it wasn't an easy conversation, you know, especially when, you know, we have, you know, folks in our community that still allow them to say it. But it was a conversation that needed to be had. And so for what I'm trying to get folks to understand is that, like, I don't understand why this is so fucking difficult for us to get through our fucking heads. Like,
that's what I'm trying to find out,
at too. Some point, you just have to admit that you want to be racist, that you take pleasure in being racist, and that you don't want to confront your own racism, right? because you wouldn't say this word around black people unless you wanted to get your ass beat, unless you wanted to fight. And TBH, you deserve to get your ass beat. Like, we do. If we're saying this word, like, we deserve to get our ass beat.
Yeah, I truly don't understand it either. Like, I know we just broke everything down, but it just boggles my mind. And I don't want to sound like, oh, I've never said this word and I'm better than you. But for me, like, where I grew up, I had black friends, you know, in elementary school, middle school, et cetera. And I was never comfortable saying that word, even before I was like, you know, even before I knew like I don't know how to explain it, like the politics of it, right? Like, even like growing up listening to hip hop, listening to R&B, like, I never felt anyone that wasn't black, like, I always felt like uncomfortable hearing it from non-black people. So for me, like, for a lot of people to use that as an excuse, like, oh, I have black friends and I grew up in the hood and, you know, all this stuff, I'm just like, I don't get it. And especially now, again, it's 2019. I feel like this is a tired conversation, especially when these conversations come up. I see, you know, we always have to argue with other non-black Latinx about it. And I am tired of fucking reading these comments. So I can't even imagine, like, black people having to say this shit over and over and over again. Because there's, like, black people in my post too, that like argue back and forth with non-black Latinx. And I'm like, why do they have to do this? You know, like, oh my God, it's truly fucking upsetting to me. And one thing that I hate seeing a lot when a lot of these things happen is like people that are like, we don't claim them. We don't claim so-and-so, or they're not one of us. And I'm like, no, they are. Like, they are one of us. Like, this is us. This is like the hashtag, you know, like, what was it? How do Mexicans talk or whatever? Like, this is how we talk. Racist as fuck. Like, and so, like, I think, like, we need to stop trying to disassociate ourselves from people, you know, like these three guys that we were talking about the shooting, like, to say, like, oh, they're not one of us, or, like, we don't know them. Yeah, we do know them. They're, like, our primos. They're our friends. They're, even if we don't know anybody like them, like, well, I'm sure we all do, but, like, this is our community. We need to start saying, this is us. What are we going to do about it? You know, instead of saying, like, oh, no, that's not us, or I don't know them, or, like, they're not with us. Like, yeah, they are. And we need to start accepting that. Even if me, personally, you, whoever's listening to this, if you personally do not say the N-word, you personally are trying to call out your friends and family, like, you're trying to do better, you know what I mean? Like, you still have to include yourself in these statements, because it's easy to say, that's not me, I don't do that. Or like, I don't really know anybody like that. That this doesn't apply to me. Like, it does. And we need to start taking, like, accountability for ourselves, but also people in our community, because here we are, like, this happens every like 6 months, something like this happens. Like, it happens every day, but it seems like every 6 months, like, this big thing happens where we have this conversation. And, you know, every 6 months, it seems like it's always fucking Gina Rodriguez, TBH. Like, like, she's always doing some shit. Like, I don't fucking get it. I don't get it.
I don't even want to talk about her. Like, I don't want to talk about her. And yet,
and like, here we are.
As we were recording for this episode, and as we were preparing to record for this episode, you know, we were always going to talk about, like, you know, how non-black Latinx say the N-word. And then what does she do, like, right before we get on the fucking record? She fucking says the N-word on her Instagram stories. Like, so she was rapping along to, like, a Fuji song, and not even, like, consistently. So she was just, like, you know, randomly muttering out words. And so she begins muttering some of the words to a Fuji song, drops the song, and then all of a sudden picks it up back up when, you know, Lauryn Hill says the N-word. And she decides that this is okay to post on her Instagram stories, on her own Instagram stories, for some fucking reason. And then, after she's called out, rightfully so, for saying the N-word, she's like, oh, I'm sorry that I've offended you for rapping along to one of my favorite songs that I grew up with because I love Lauryn Hill. Like, that was not an apology for saying the N-word. Like, first of all, not it should not have come out of your mouth. Like, second of all, like, why did you feel so comfortable putting this on your channel? Like, a part of Dina Rodriguez knew that her fan base was completely okay with being anti-black because she's gotten away with being anti-black consistently since the beginning of her career, and her fans always show up for her. And we've had to experience this. We know Dina Rodriguez has been someone we've talked about, like, a lot. Like, despite never watching her, like, more than the first season of her show, like, I somehow find her fucking name in my mouth all the fucking time because she's representative of a lot of us non-black Latinxes. And she's doing a really shitty job of, like, representing us. Or, you know, some might say she's doing a good job of representing us because she's representing just how fucked up and anti-black we are. Like, for you to put that on your story so confidently, you saying the N-word, like, it took a lot of confidence in your racist fan base, right? And this is another example of, like, how representation doesn't mean shit if we're just going to keep perpetuating the same fucking systems of oppression that have kept us where we are for time eternal.
Like, yeah, it was really bold, especially, like, given her fucking history. Like, this bitch literally was ran off Twitter. She has gotten so much backlash. She doesn't even, I don't know if you all follow her on Instagram, but, like, I don't. But I've seen her Instagram, and she disables all her comments for a reason, recently, because of all this backlash. Like, she knows that people are, like, not about her shit, which is anti-blackness. And so to be, you know, like, to know that people are probably waiting for you to do some more, like, racist shit, and then guess what? You fucking do it, and you do it very, like, proudly on fucking your Instagram story. Like, that just, ugh. It just, like, reaffirms that you don't give a shit. Like, that's it. Like, I mean, we, like, this isn't the first time Gina does some shit like this. We've talked about her extensively on Bitter Brown Femmes and, like, on Queer Chicano Chisme and Chicanisma, like, on Twitter, on our personal accounts. Not just us. Everybody else has. So, it really is, like, you don't give a fuck. You don't give a shit. You don't. Like, it, as a matter of fact, it feels like it's so fucking disrespectful. Like, you're, like, I feel like it's a joke, even, at this point. To know that a lot of people know that you're anti-black, that you've done and said anti-black racist shit, and then for you to, you know, fake apologize for it, make yourself the victim, go on some talk show and cry about it, and then a few months later just proudly say the N-word, like, okay, girl. And that apology sounded sarcastic as fuck. It sounded like she was bothered that she had to apologize. So, and no, she's not a fucking Afro-Latina, for those who love to say that in defense of her. Just like Fat Joe isn't. Just Oof. Like Jennifer Lopez isn't. Just like all of these people that, because I guess that's like, I'm sure we've mentioned this, it's like the trendy thing right now to say that you're like Afro-Latinx, and most of it is just so that you have, that you try to, it, and it's most of it is to justify your own anti-blackness. Like, oh, it's totally cool, you know, my DNA taste. My DNA test said I was, like, 5% African, so it's totally cool if I say the N-word. It's totally cool if I wear this hairstyle. So, I mean, this is Latinx Heritage Month. This is what we're talking about in Latinx Heritage Month. This is how we're ending it, with fucking Gina Rodriguez saying the N-word.
You know, on the last day of Latinx Heritage Month, Gina Rodriguez gave to me.
This is the last day! Oh my gosh, this is the last day of Latinx Heritage Month. I'm done. I gotta go. Oh my god. This is so fucking embarrassed. How are we not embarrassed? I'm so embarrassed and angry and also just...
Like, if this isn't, like, fucking, like, exhibit A of, like, why we should just abolish Latinidad, like, I don't know what the fuck is.
Exactly. Oh my god. Exactly. Oh my god. I don't even know what to say. Like, we don't, like... Like, yeah, we hate having to talk about Gina Rodriguez because it's obvious, again, that at this point she simply doesn't care. She's not going to change. There's no growth. There's no accountability. But it seems like we just can't escape her. We can't
escape. Yeah, you know what's, like, even worse is that, like, one of the reasons why she keeps coming up is because
she keeps pretending like she does care and she wants to do right by social justice. Like, if she was, like, I don't know, like a Tila Tequila type of girl who, you know, who is just like,
oh, girl,
racist as fuck and just wants to, that wants that to be her life, or like a Candace Owen type of girl, like, it wouldn't matter because that's who she, that's who they, they're not shy about their racism, right? But when it comes to someone like Gina Rodriguez, who pretends to be like, oh, I'm just here to help my people, mi gente, like, that's when this becomes a problem, right? Not that it isn't a problem with actual racism, but, like, this is when things become sinister and people, you know, defend racism, right? I guess another thing that people say to justify their use of the N-word is that they say, like, oh, well, I've been called the N-word too, like, blah, blah, blah. This gives me the right to use it. And I'm like, bitch, like, I mentioned earlier, like, I've lived in spaces where people, you know, use the N-word, like, regularly, who shouldn't be using it. And, you know, when and I've been called the N-word as well. And, like, just because I've been called it doesn't give me the right to say it. And just because I said it when I was a fucking kid doesn't mean that, like, once I learned better, like, I learned to do better. And so, like, upbringing, like, being, and the word being used against you, and having black friends, and these are not excuses. These are not real excuses. Like, either admit you just want to be fucking racist and you get pleasure out of being a fucking racist and go.
Exactly. And those are the comments that, like, I, like, right now, because I did post an article about the Gina Rodriguez thing. It was just, like, not the video, but just an article about how she said it. And there's so many people defending her, so many non-black Latinas specifically, non-black defending Latinas her use of it, and a lot of
Gina Rodriguez.
Yes, like, non-black Latinos, like, they're always on this little, like, you know, appropriation of, like, black culture, and they always say the N-word too. It's not just, like, it's not just, like, women or men, right? But non-black Latinas in particular, number one, yes, they, like, go to bat for Gina Rodriguez because that's their representation, unfortunately. And so they're like, no, not my Gina, or whatever. But it's also, like, non-black Latinas, let me talk to you all for a second here. Non-black Latinas, and I see this a lot on Twitter, like, hate black women. And, like, you might not think that, but, like, oh my God, there's just so many tweets by non-black Latinas that I see where they're just always talking about black women, about black women being jealous of us, supposedly, about black women this, about black men favoriting us, like, just so much anti-black shit, particularly against black women, and it's always, like, non-black Latinas that are saying this shit, and it's not fucking cute. It's racist, number one, but it's not fucking cute, and I swear, I have so many screenshots on my phone of all these, because I've always thought, like, I take screenshots of all the anti-black shit I see, of all the, like, sexist shit I see, or comments that I get, because, like, I always want to reference them, because there's so many people that are like, oh yeah, show me where people are anti-black, and it's like, at the same time, I'm like, why do I need these receipts? Like, I don't need them. Like, you can literally go on Twitter and see for yourself, but I save them anyway, first of all, but second of all, like, why do you have so much energy to talk shit about black people, black women? Like, it makes me speechless. It shouldn't, but it does, because, you know, when people are like, I can't be anti-black, or I'm not racist because I'm brown, right? Because I'm Latina, because I'm Latino. So that means that I am also oppressed, and I also understand racism. And then when people say, okay, but you're still not black, so you're still not going to experience anti-blackness, you're still not going to experience racism on this level, you still have some sort of privilege, right? You still have non-black privilege as a non-black person, and a lot of people don't understand that, because they're like, no, we're all people of color, you know, this false umbrella of, like, we're all people of color. And it's like, at the same time, like, I know that se hacen, porque, like, if you truly believed that non-black privilege didn't exist, and you truly believe that we are the same as black people, then you wouldn't be doing this anti-black shit. Because a lot of the reasons that, one of the reasons that a lot of people invest in, like, anti-black racism, is because they know that they are not black, because they know that they have a closer proximity to whiteness, and therefore, like, they are protected, and therefore they are privileged, and having, looking down on Black people and thinking that Black people are beneath you, and knowing that, you know, Black people, you know, experience police brutality more, that Black people experience all these systems of oppression more than you. Like, you know that. And that's why you are anti-Black as fuck, because you're not Black. And you know that that means something, and that it holds privilege, which it does. So when people are like, oh, no, Black privilege, what do you mean? And it's like, you do know. You do know. That's why you're anti-Black. Because you do know that you're not the same as Black people. And you like that. You like having this proximity to whiteness, because you also think that having that is going to save you from racism at the same time. And like, the end goal is to be like white people.
Yeah, they do it to like reassert their place in like the racial hierarchy. Like,
yes. Definitely. I meant to say, that's what I meant to say on my whole rant. That one sentence. Yeah. So thank you. But yes, exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah, I think, and I guess another thing people use, I guess when we're taking this time to like debunk every single excuse people have for saying the N-word, another thing people say is like, well, I listen to rap music or hip-hop music, and I'm like, bitch, me too. And like, you know, and so, you know, I do have this like fear that the word lives in the back of my mind because of what I listen to. But it's just like, okay, like, how hard is it not to fucking say it? Like, even when rapping along or singing along, like, just pause, just like, don't open your fucking mouth as this word happens. Like, it is very, it's simple. Again, like, you're listening to Black music, so that in and of itself, like, being invited to listen to into this world of like rap and hip-hop, like, it is not a passport to, you know, take what we want from Black culture and still be fucking anti-Black. So I guess we were gonna end this episode with Dixie Chicks, but we've also been talking about like anti-Blackness so much that I'm like, should we play a Black artist instead? And so I don't know, someone that I've been listening to a lot has been Ari Lennox, who deserves to be way bigger than she is. She gets like 3 million listeners on Spotify, but she deserves to be like a fucking smash. And so her song BMO deserves to be like one of the songs of the summer. Like, no disrespect to Lil Nas, like, she really deserved to be like played at every party and like hyped up. Like, her aesthetic is like on another level. Her sound is so rich and her voice is so sultry, and just her whole vibe is so unique. She's like funny and like sexy and like fashionable and also like really like tough and like, you know, super like witty, and I really love that. And her song New Apartment from her album Shea Butter Baby made me want to not have roommates anymore, because I want a new apartment. So yeah, that is what I have to say about Ari Lennox. I know that Cassandra does not listen to Ari Lennox. So yeah.
Yes, I do not, but also yes, let's listen. No, but I mean, yes, I mean, we also like, me and Ruben, like, sometimes we bond over like, we both love the music artists that we pick. Sometimes they're into it, and like, you know what I mean, like, it's their choice. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, this is what I've been listening to. So also introducing each other, but also introducing y'all to like, you know, new music. And maybe it's not new to you, but to someone it might be. So I'm excited to listen, so let's do that. Any last thoughts?
Yeah. Any last thoughts? Feel free to book us over on bitterbrownfemspodcast.com/bookings, or email us at bookings@bitterbrownfemspodcast.com. I realize that maybe I should have named our website something shorter, but it is what it is now. Follow us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. Remember to rate and review us on iTunes, please. We really want to break the top 1,000 of society and culture. And yeah, share our shit. Tag us if you have any thoughts. Don't tag us if you just want to talk shit, because then, you know, Cassandra's going to come for you and I'm going to find the message like, you know, a day later and you're already been obliterated on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Yes. So also, hopefully we'll record again soon, but if not, yeah, hopefully we record again soon. I was going to say, if not, have a very happy and safe Halloween. We might see you before then. We might see you right after. But have a good one. And yeah, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
All right. All right, y'all.
And stop saying the fucking N-word if you're not black. Bye, bitch.
Bye.